this is the Xander Bogaerts that we were promised, as Ben Carsley would say. He is hitting for more power. He's even running a little bit, which is still really surprising. But he is going to be that average in power kind of shortstop, and it's going to be just an excellent package for a long time.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 92 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball perspectives fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and I'm joined by not my usual co-host, Mike Gianella. We're giving him the week off since he's been doing these every single week. So we're joined this week by Brett Sayer. Brett, how's it going?
Not too bad. How you doing, George?
I'm doing pretty good. It's exciting. Julio Urias is coming up. And unfortunately, we do not have our BP event at Citi Field on Friday night when he's pitching. But we do have it on July 9th, so...
We do have it on July 9th. It is going to be a good time. I'm going to be there, and Mike is going to be there, and George is going to be there, and a bunch of other people are going to be there as well.
Yeah, Jeff Pastrnato and the rest of the gang. It's going to be fun.
That's true. If you listen to other podcasts of ours, Ben Lindbergh is going to be there. Craig Goldstein is going to be there. It's going to be an event.
All right, so we're going to dive right into our updated rankings. BP just put out our series this past week on the site. What do we call it? Updating the Tiers.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, so last show we talked a little bit about the process with Mike on as well, and you guys put both of these rankings out. So what I'm going to do is basically go through sort of each position, talk about some of the guys who moved the most from each tier and everything like that. That's the rundown for tonight. First, we got to go through a little bit of housekeeping. You can read us at baseballperspectives.com. Follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. If you want to email us, you can. flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Finally, don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever you're using to listen to this podcast, Stitcher Radio app, whatever you got. Every subscription rating review helps us out, so we really appreciate all that support, so head on over and do that. So we're going to dive right into our updated rankings. We're not going to do catchers because, frankly, they're really boring. So I wanted to dive right into first base, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't lead this discussion off with David Ortiz, who's just doing superhuman things right now. Obviously, if you're in a dynasty league, it's a whole different discussion. But from a redraft perspective, I mean, how do you properly value this guy? Because we bumped him up to the 4-star tier. He came into the season. We had him in our preseason rankings in the 3-star tier. But the guy's hitting almost .350. He hit another home run tonight against the Rockies. He's been incredible. I mean, what do you do with David Ortiz? How are you valuing him right now, Brett?
I mean, he's a no doubt top 50 player overall. And you know, he's even higher than you would think in a list like that. You know, the batting average, I don't think the batting average is necessarily built to last. I think he settles back down sort of as a .280 guy going forward. I think that's realistic. But I mean, the power has always been there. The runs batted in have always been there. This really, it's incredible that he is just not slowing down at all. But this is David Ortiz. This has been David Ortiz for for years. And, you know, sometimes I think about it and I am amazed, and sometimes I think about it and I wonder why we thought this was going to be any different.
Yeah. See, the thing for me is I don't know about the durability, because, I mean, if you look at him, he's legging out triples. He's got like 22 doubles right now. I mean, these are insane numbers. And I think there's going to reach a point where physically, I don't know if he's still going to be able to, you know, play every single day as we get down the stretch here closer to the postseason later on in the summer. So that's one lingering concern I do have. But I mean, if you're looking at in a redraft league, if there's a team that has David Ortiz and they're not really in contention, he's a guy I'd try and go all in to try and get. I think that's definitely something I would be looking at. One guy who fell a little bit in our rankings was Anthony Rizzo. I believe he was a 5-star to begin the season on our draft edition of these tiered rankings. He's now a 4-star. Was there any reason for that specifically? I know you put together the first base tier. So what was the thought process behind dropping Rizzo down to the 4-star?
Yeah, I mean, part of the, you know, the biggest reason I think is the fact that it looks like Rizzo is not going to run all that much. You know, he had 23 stolen base attempts in 2015. He's had 3 so far this year in what's rapidly becoming almost a third of a season. So I don't think he gets to double digits in steals, which was the argument for having him in the 5-star in the first place. You know, I think he was kind of barely a 5-star guy at the beginning. I know there are some people that were really high on him at the beginning of the year, people who had him, you know, in the top 5 or 6 players overall. But, you know, he's been very solid. The batting average is fluky low at this point. He's his strikeout and walk rates are even better than they were last year. So I'm not really worried about him being a disappointment. I just think that, you know, the 5-star was predicated on the steals, and the steals just are not coming.
Yeah, I forgot to lay this out at the start, but the general description for each tier, 5-star tiers are, we're talking elite studs, first or second round value, guys who are going to earn, you know, upwards of $30 from a valuation standpoint. 4-stars is, you know, studs, your $20 players, your core guys. 3-stars are double-digit value guys. We're talking teens in terms of dollar values. And then 2-stars are single-dollar guys. So that's digging maybe into deeper mixed and AL and NL-only territory with those types of guys. So anyone else at first base you want to talk about? Because I think there are some really interesting names that snuck into the 3-star tier. We've talked a lot about Chris Carter, but there are some guys who were pretty much in the 1-star tier to begin the year who are now in that 3-star tier that I think are pretty interesting if you can get them for less than a 3-star price tag if you're going after them in a deal. But who do you like from that tier specifically, Brett?
I mean, I still really like Chris Carter. I don't think we need to talk about him for that long, just because I think my feelings about it, and I think your feelings as well, are pretty well known at this point. But yeah, I mean, the power is excellent, and the batting average I just think is not going to be as bad as people thought. I mean, people were worried about him having like a 200 average. I think, you know, I think he can hit 240 to 250 in the National League over the course of a season. Maybe it goes down to 230, but, you know, if he hits 35 to 40 home runs, no one's going to care. Other than that, I mean, Victor Martinez is having a really, really interesting start to the season. He's looking like the 2013 version, 2014, which was the last year. Was 2014?
Yeah, 2014. I brought this up with you at the start of the year during the offseason. I was like, well, if Victor Martinez is healthy, like, can he do that again? And then he hurt, I think it was his hamstring in spring training, and I completely jumped off the bandwagon. I was like, oh man, I just don't think he's going to stay healthy. But yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, he's been excellent. You know, the power's a little bit less than it was in his 2014 season, but, you know, he's hitting 338. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, he's got the same issues as Ortiz, where you just see, you know, even a guy who's playing DH pretty much all the time, you're never sure how long he's going to hold up for, just because he's got a pretty poor track record of health. But while he's in there, he's just been excellent.
Yeah, so where is Chris Davis in these first base rankings?
Yeah, we'll get there, George.
I had to do it.
We'll get there.
He's in there in another position. Second baseman, this group's kind of odd to me. Obviously, D. Gordon's no longer really in these rankings. He's down, I think, in like the one-star tier just because of the suspension. But Robinson Cano moved up to the five-star tier. We talked a lot about him. That's pretty legitimate. He looks like he's completely locked in. The tier that's really interesting to me is actually the four-star tier. When we did these rankings in the preseason, there were five guys in that four-star tier, and yet only Ian Kinsler and Jason Kipnis remain from that group in the preseason. You know, we're talking guys like Anthony Rendon and people like that who've fallen out of that tier. But of the names that jumped into that tier, who do you stands out that's maybe the most surprising that they're in the four-star tier right now?
The most surprising, I think the default answer that a lot of people would go to is Daniel Murphy, but I'm not that I'm not surprised by this. I'm very surprised by this, but Murphy is a good contact hitter who's having a great start to the year. The guy who I think surprises me even more than Murphy is Ben Zobrist. Mm-hmm. And this has been, Zobrist has been flying completely under the radar, it seems, in fantasy leagues. And he's been unbelievable. He's, you know, in, it gets, he gets sadly with his 346 batting average, he gets devalued a little bit in batting average leagues because he has a league leading 453 on base. But his everything is excellent, and he's even running a little bit too. I mean, he had three steals last year. He's got two already this year. I mean, you didn't draft him expecting him to get to double digits, and I don't think he's going to get to double digits. But the guy's got 32 walks and 18 strikeouts, and he is just completely dialed in. He's going to score. He might score 120 runs in that Cubs lineup, and you know, he's hitting for some power. He's just contributing everywhere. He's been really unbelievable. So Daniel Murphy gets all the attention, and rightly so. But Zobrist is right there with him, and it's been extremely impressive.
I don't think I've seen a guy who looks more comfortable at the plate than Zobrist does right now. I mean, he just is completely in his zone. We obviously the plate discipline's great, but when he's getting pitches to hit, he's driving them, and you gotta love what you've seen from Zobrist so far. The big thing I always say, it's, you know, just watch like a week's worth of plate appearances, and you can't help but come away impressed with what Zobrist is doing right now. I think we thought Dan Murphy was going to run more. I think in the offseason that was one of the big reasons we touted that he could really take a step forward in from a valuation standpoint, was that he was going to run more, but he only has one steal. So I think that's pretty interesting. Anyone else from second base that you want to talk about? Or because I don't think like there's much to say about, you know, Brandon Phillips or Brett Laurie, guys like that. I don't.
No, just a quick hit on a couple of these guys. A healthy Dustin Pedroia is still an awesome Dustin Pedroia.
Well, that lineup's stacked.
And that's, you know, that's really, really good to see. You know, Neil Walker continues to be excellent. And, you know, I know the power is clearly not going to be what he's pacing for, but, you know, I think he's going to get to 25 home runs. The, you know, he's in a nice spot in that lineup behind, you know, behind Cespedes, and it's just it's lining up to be a pretty healthy season for Walker, and I've been a big Walker supporter for a long time, so having him succeed for the Mets is pretty fun.
Yep.
Other than that, I mean there are guys at the bottom that are somewhat interesting, but they're all kind of meh. I don't really believe in Devon Travis. I don't think I think people are excited for him to come back, but I'm not optimistic that he's going to be much of an impact guy in even deeper mixed leagues. Aaron Hill is playing baseball, and he's not playing baseball terribly, which is unbelievable. Well, not unbelievable, but it's good to see. I like rooting for Aaron Hill.
It's surprising and refreshing, I think, are the adjectives we could use there.
It is, like New Coke.
Pepsi One. The guy I like is Logan Forsythe, actually. He's hitting .308, four home runs, three steals, and 123 plate appearances. He's actually on the DL right now. He got hit by a pitch, and I think he what did he do? He like fractured a clavicle or something strange. So he's going to be out until maybe the first or second week of June, but he's a guy I've been pretty impressed with. He's leading off for the Rays once he gets back, and Brandon Guyer's done well. I think that Rays lineup's a little better than people think it is, so he's a guy I like. If you could get him now while he's still out of action, I think he's a nice guy to target. The position I really like is shortstop. I think this is the most fascinating position, and we could maybe spend an hour or two here. We're not going to do that, but there are certainly some interesting names here. Obviously, the big development is Manny Machado at the top of the position, but Xander Bogaerts, he has a 19-game hitting streak as of tonight. He's hitting around .350. He's hitting for power. He's running. This is a guy who's putting it all together, right? He's the clear-cut, I'd say, number two guy behind Machado at this point, with Correa right there in that category as well, in the five stars.
Yeah, this is the Xander Bogaerts that we were promised, as Ben Carsley would say. He is hitting for more power. He's even running a little bit, which is still really surprising. But he is going to be that average and power kind of shortstop, and it's going to be just an excellent package for a long time. He's not a .350 hitter, not that anyone would expect him to be, but you know, he hit .320 last year, and as the power develops, I think the average ticks down slightly. But you know, I don't see any great reason why he can't hit around .300 consistently year to year. He's strikes out about 15% of the time, which is not which is certainly not unbelievable. The whole package is coming together there, and with that lineup and all the counting stats, it's really awesome to see.
Yeah, Xander Bogaerts, obviously, he's a guy who could roll out of bed and probably hit .300 at this point. But the one thing we always kind of wondered was whether or not he was going to start hitting more fly balls. I mean, he's still putting the ball in play on the ground a ton, but when he's getting chances to drive pitches, I think we saw that the other night in one of the games against Colorado. The Red Sox were down. He got a pitch to drive and just crushed it. So I like that sort of development from him. Xander's awesome. We could do the whole Bogaerts show for another hour, but how close to being in the five-star tier is Francisco Lindor at this point? Because he's obviously been phenomenal. I've really liked what he's done. He's hitting third in that Indians lineup pretty much every day now. There's a ton to like with him, and especially maybe I'm talking more from a long-term perspective, because he's a guy who's never going to move off a shortstop, but I really like Francisco Lindor. Was he close at all to being a five-star guy in your opinion, or is he fine right where he is?
No, he was pretty close to getting up there. Although, it's tough to have a player without sort of 20 home run pop in a five-star category, even at shortstop. And Lindor, I don't think does. I think Lindor is sort of in that 10-12 range. I think his power output in 2015 was fluky on the high side, but everything else I think we're seeing is legit. He's essentially similar to Bogaerts, just with less opportunity for counting stats, less power, but with slightly more usable speed. I think whereas Bogaerts probably tops out at around 15 steals or so, you know, Lindor could get up to 25-ish, maybe even touch slightly above that while hitting over .300, which is which is, you know, why he's almost a five-star guy. But he is proving to be a better fantasy player than I think even the most optimistic fantasy analysts thought when he was a prospect. You know, he was always a better in real life guy than a better in fantasy guy, and you know, he still is now, which really underscores how awesome of a real life player he is. But yeah, this is a legit for Lindor, and he's going to be a really, really good fantasy player for a really long time.
He's definitely a better contact hitter, in terms of squaring it up and driving the ball than I think we were led to believe based on the minor league numbers, and what scouts were saying. So I've definitely been very impressed by Lindor. Obviously last year he was great as well. So not a lot of surprise. The way I kind of view him is he's a lock to earn $20 to $25, but because of that variable, like you mentioned, with the power, it's hard to see a $30 season from him, like you could easily get from a guy like Carlos Correa. So I'd be close to putting him in the five stars, but I don't know if I could do it. I don't know. The guys I look at who are now in the three-star tier, I mean, were Troy Tulowitzki and Trevor Story the hardest guys to rank? Because it just feels like that to me. I wouldn't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I mean, they're on opposite trains, right? But, you know, Story started off extremely hot and then got pretty cold and then got a little hot again. And now is sort of, I think, settling into the type of hitter he is, which is, you know, someone who can hit in cores, you know, about 250 to 260 average. Can hit 25 home runs at the position and will probably have a 280 on base. He just is not, he is not a patient hitter, and he is going to strike out a ton. I mean, we're talking like Chris Carter strikeout numbers. That's tough to do as a Colorado hitter, because when you play half your games in cores, it's tough to strike out on breaking balls all that much, and Story is even good at that. So he's certainly not the fluke that some were painting him as at the beginning of the year, but he's also not the He's also not a savior. He's really, it's a boring answer, but he's somewhere in between. But 260, if he can do 260 and 25 from shortstop, that's, you know, that could be a pretty, if he establishes that baseline, that's more or less a four-star guy going forward at the position.
Yeah,
because he can run a little bit too.
That's true. There's not a whole lot to say with Tulowitzki. He's just having really a terrible year, but we sort of still believe in the guy's natural ability, so it's hard to drop him any further than the three-star tier. If you're looking at this from almost like a trade value standpoint, I don't think I would be comfortable dropping him any lower at this point. Jung Ho Gong's in this tier. This is a fascinating tier of players. Addison Russell, I don't know whether to be encouraged or discouraged by his start. I feel like he's going to go one way or the other here in the second half. He's either going to turn it on and be really good or just not really put it together at all. Have you gotten a sense from Addison Russell? How do you view him sort of at this point? Because I feel like it's going to go one of two ways in the second half coming up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Russell is long-term, I absolutely believe in him taking that step forward.
Right.
But I have no idea if it's coming in the second half this year. I really hope it is, because I like Russell a lot as a player. But no, I mean, you're being probabilistic, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're valuing him as the player he is now, plus the whatever percentage chance he breaks out in the second half. Maybe that's 25-35%, something like that. I think it's probably more likely than not that he's sort of a decent player, but someone who ultimately ends up disappointing in 2016 from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, he's a great real life player, but you know, it's just not it's not something that should either be forgotten or necessarily baked in. But yeah, I absolutely still believe in him from a long term standpoint.
All right, I want to move on, but one quick hitter. If I told you Tim Anderson was going to be the starting shortstop for the White Sox June 1st, what tier would you rank him, and what star level would you grade him? Because he has, I think it's like 7 multi-hit games in his last 10 for Charlotte and AAA. He's really killing it, hitting over 300. Where would you rank him if he were to get the call in the next week or two?
I'd probably put him towards the top of the one-star tier. I really do believe in Tim Anderson's talent, but he is going to have an adjustment period when he gets to the majors, and it might just not be a capital A. It might be a capital A, a capital D, and a capital J. He is a free swinger, and he is going to get some hits right away, and then he's going to get taken advantage of by pitchers until he learns not to. And if he does, he could be a really great fantasy player down the road. And if he doesn't, then, you know, he becomes what, Corey Patterson without the power?
I don't want to even think about that.
Yeah, there's no point in thinking about that. But yeah. It's in 2016, and this is the same argument for both for and against Nick Williams. You know, Williams has a ton of talent, but, you know, there are these profiles of guys who are just ripe candidates to be completely exposed in their first taste of the major league level.
Yep, I love the talent, though. Anderson's definitely someone to watch. Same with Trey Turner. They're both one-star guys, though, right now. Third base, not a whole lot has changed. I mean, really, the 4- and 5-star tiers, I think the only change from our preseason rankings was Adrian Beltre moved up to the 4-star, and that's mainly a product of health and vitality and whatever else you want to use to describe Adrian Beltre, because the guy is he's a machine. He's not human. What else is there to really talk about here?
Third base is a pretty boring position. I mean, yeah. No one needs to hear us talk about Danny Valencia anymore.
No. Nick Castellanos, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Should we talk about Travis Shaw for a second?
Well, okay. What do you think the ceiling is for Travis Shaw?
I think we're looking at the ceiling.
No, I know. That's my point. I don't think it's getting any better. He's over 300 right now. Mm-hmm. He's on pace for what, 20 to 25 home runs at this point, in that range?
Yeah. I think 280 and 20 is tops for Shaw.
Yeah.
The guy's striking out like 25% of the time. He's not going to be a 300. He's going to be a 306 hitter. That's just not happening.
No, I was going to say, 275, 280, 15 to 20. So I really like Travis Shaw. I think he's a fantastic guy to have on your real baseball team, but this isn't Josh Donaldson, okay? Let's just be realistic about it. As much as I like Travis Shaw, there's not a whole lot left there, upside-wise. Yeah. Joey Gallo, do you care at all for redraft this year, now that he's actually up and has third base eligibility, or is that just a stay away in a redraft?
No, I do, but he's got to play. I mean, he hasn't played since he's gotten called up. So
yeah, that's weird.
The strikeout rate in AAA was down. I still think he's squarely in the middle of his adjustment period at the major league level. So I'm not much of a believer in him coming up and just swatting 30 home runs the rest of the way. But I think that, I think he's going to do a little bit better than last year, but not quite get there to the point where he establishes himself in that lineup. And I don't think he's up for good.
All right, moving on to outfield. Mookie Betts, number 3. Yoenis Cespedes, number 4 in the 5-star tier. Betts is on pace for some crazy numbers. We're talking like 130, 40 runs scored, 120 RBIs. He's 3rd in the American League in RBI. Betts is crazy. He is on pace to go 30-30 pretty much. I don't think that any of those things is going to happen, but he's had a really great year. And you could say the same thing about Cespedes. I think those guys, to me, have really cemented themselves as 5-star you know, $30 fantasy contributors. Is that a fair mm-hmm. statement at this point?
I think that's fair. And you know what? There are a lot of parallels here to another former Red Sox player, in his early prime. 1997, Nomar Garcia Parra hit .306 with 30 homers and 22 steals at a leadoff spot for Boston. He scored 122 runs, drove in 98 runs. I remember a lot of these because this was 1997 was the first time I won a fantasy title, and it was almost solely because of Garcia Parra. But you know, it's that same, you know, it, obviously they play different positions, but you know, Betts is just he's an excellent hitter. He's got pop. He's got speed. He's hitting at the top of the lineup. It doesn't even, there is no top or bottom of that Red Sox lineup. It's just like one amorphous blob trying to eat you and being successful most of the time. It's crazy. I mean, the fact is that Betts is closer to Harper than he is to Cespedes. And that's, you know, I'd say that's crazy, but it's not really crazy. I mean, he was a borderline first round guy coming into the year. And this is, you know, this is really what people thought he was capable of.
Your first fantasy title was in 1997, correct?
That is correct.
Julio Urias was born in August of 1996.
I know.
That's quite terrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah. Everybody's having an existential crisis today.
Yeah, everybody feels old. It's a little strange. Even like teenagers are freaking out. It's not good. 4 stars. George Springer, I think. Well, there's Chris Davis. All right, here's my question. If you had to pick a name in the 4-star tier who was going to end up in the 5-star tier by the end of the season, who would it be? Who's the most likely person if you had to bet your life on it right now? Who would it be?
Stanton.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's got to be Stanton. I mean, it's the thing about him is that
Would you bet your life on it, though? I mean,
no, of course not. No, I wouldn't bet my life on any of these guys. No, I wouldn't bet my life on any of these guys being 4-5-star guys. Okay. But Stanton was a 5-star guy. He's still showing the power. The strikeout rate is becoming astronomical, and he doesn't run to supplement. So if he's going to be a 250, 255 hitter, he's going to have to hit 60 home runs in order to, you know, in order to make this work as a 5-star guy. There's not enough positional there's not enough categorical value there to go around.
Let's not rule out 60 home runs, though.
I'm not going to rule out 60 home runs. I'm just saying that's what he needs to do.
All right.
Were you looking for me to say Gregory Polanco?
No, Polanco. Yeah, I don't know. He might have a shot if the steals are there. Yeah, I don't know. I'm done with irrational hypotheticals. These guys are all good. You should own them and trade
for them. They are all great.
Hey, Hanley's in this tier, by the way. Nice call in the preseason.
Hell yeah, Hanley is in this tier.
Gotta give you some props there. Absolutely. The 3-star. I mean, the weird thing to me is Odubel Herrera, but like what else do you need to say at this point other than that he was a good player a year ago who seems to be making incremental gains with his approach at the plate and ability to hit the ball? I don't know what more there is to say. Same thing goes for Justin Upton, except it seems like he's devolving into this guy who strikes out a ton and then can't hit pitches that he should be able to. So I just think those ranks are interesting, but I don't know how much more there is to say about either of those guys. Do you have anything on either of them that's interesting, or do you want to talk about Jackie Bradley?
No, I mean, doubt Odubel Herrera at your own risk at this point.
He's a good player.
He's a really good player. And you know, Upton is 24th on this list. I think Upton's going to turn it around this year. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, and he makes for an interesting trade target if you're sort of a team that you feel is on the cusp that needs to sort of take some chances. You know, he's someone who, you know, he's going through the NL to AL adjustment, and he'll snap out of it at some point, but it there is always a chance it might not be in 2016.
I love Justin Upton, the player, but he just has had a really terrible year to this point. Jackie Bradley and Nomar Mazara, these guys, I think you could make an argument for the four-star tier, especially Mazara. I mean, do you see it that way? I mean, the crazy thing about Mazara is, like, he's hitting home runs off lefties. He's hitting everyone.
He is. I mean, the track record for me is not there to be a four-star guy, but he's clearly a three-star guy, and he's clearly not going anywhere. I think there will be an adjustment period here. I think it will come at some point this year, just because the numbers say it should. Almost everyone goes through an adjustment period. You know what? Maybe we all end up looking stupid, and Mazara is just an all-star hitter from the day he gets up to the majors.
See, there's no speed there, so he can't. He's not ever going to be a five-star, or maybe, you know what I mean. I don't think he can ever get there because there's zero speed.
No, I mean, you could be a 330 guy and be a five-star guy. You could, you know, that's why we talk about Andrew McCutchen and his steals. I mean, his steals don't have to come all the way back for him to be a five-star guy. He just needs to get back to being Andrew McCutchen.
I almost said something negative about Nomar Mazara. It frightened me. I almost stopped mid-sentence. Oh, boy.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. Marcelo Ozuna, nice to see the comeback happening here. Good player, bad situation last year. I think we talked about that a ton. Boy, the two-star tier, man, Leonis Martin, do you want to expound on that? Because I don't know if people, unless you own Martin, it's really hard to appreciate what he's sort of done this year, really reviving his career after it looked at the end of last year like he was pretty much done from a mixed league standpoint.
I mean, if you want to understand what Martin's done so far, look at his stats side by side with Carlos Correa.
Yeah,
they've pretty much done the exact same thing. I think, you know, Martin's going to have trouble hitting for much average. I think, you know, if he hits above 260 this year, I'd be pretty surprised, and it might be slightly lower than that. The power, I think, is also going to trail off a little bit. But I think 15 homers and 25 steals are absolutely possible here, and maybe even a little bit more in the stolen bases. He looked like he was a prime bounce back candidate coming into the season, and he's really bouncing back. You know, he's another probably couple of weeks away from being a firm three-star guy.
I noticed you snuck Jesse Winker onto your rankings. I saw that. Don't think I did. Didn't. He's at 74. Carlos Gomez at 57. Man, what a bad year for him. I think that's pretty much it for outfielders. Let's talk pitching real quick, because there's not a lot at the. Is there anything in the five star category tier that we need to discuss at all? Or I don't think so. But is there anyone there that we need to talk about? Or
yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit more worried about Cole and DeGrom than I think Mike is. So I think I would have cut the five-star tier personally after Lester. But other than that, there's really very little argument for any of this, other than to give Clayton Kershaw a completely different article for which to establish his greatness. But
yeah, I was going to say, doesn't he get the first-ever six-star tier? Or maybe he even did.
I think last year or 2 years ago, I think we either did or we were joking about making a six-star tier for him.
It's nuts. Like if every week he's throwing like 18 innings with, you know, 20 something strikeouts and no walks, it's crazy. Wow. Four-star tier. Mike has Jose Quintana at 17. I think that's a little aggressive. I was the person shouting at the top of my lungs, draft Jose Quintana all offseason because his ADP was way too low. But I think 17 is aggressive.
It is aggressive. He's been really good. But then the question is, who do you put ahead of him?
Carlos Martinez.
You can make the argument for Carlos Martinez. I'd have Cole Hamels. Mike and I go back and forth about Cole Hamels all the time. I would have Cole Hamels probably right around where Quintana is, maybe ahead of Danny Salazar. I'd have him pretty close to top 15.
Yes, yeah,
I'd rather have Hamels than Jacob DeGrom this year, right now. I just don't think the strikeouts are. DeGrom is still a really good pitcher. I just don't think the strikeouts are going to be there to the point where he needs them to be in order to be a top 15 starter. Mm-hmm. I'm a Cole Hamels fanboy. I'd almost put, yeah. I mean, you can't with his durability, but I mean, Rich Hill.
Yes.
Dude.
Yeah. Value.
For if you're ranking pitchers on a start by start basis, I think Rich Hill might be a 5-star guy right now.
I've enjoyed the ride with Rich Hill. We text about it routinely. I'm like, what more can you say? He's awesome. I didn't want that to come off as like, I don't know, being critical of Mike's ranking, but I just thought Quintana was a little aggressive, especially when you compare it to the Hamels ranking. So I was like, but yeah. All right.
I think the whole point is that there's really not all that much separating this group. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the first couple of guys on the four-star tier are guys you could make the argument to slip into the 5-star, but past Johnny Cueto, I think you could make the argument as a 5-star guy. Yeah. Jose Fernandez, you have a tough time making the argument just because of the number of innings the rest of the way. I mean, he's going to pitch 3/4 of the innings that the rest of these guys are going to pitch. And it makes a big difference when you add everything up. But other than that, he's clearly a 5-star guy.
Okay.
Other than that, everyone's kind of together. You could really rank these guys in 10 different ways, and you really wouldn't get much of an argument from me.
The 3-star
pitchers.
Yeah, exactly. The 3-star tier, there's two guys I want to hit on. The first is Steven Matz, who's at 34, so right at the top of the tier. Would you have him in the 4-star tier, or is there just not enough of a durability and then history of the sustained success for him to do that yet?
I would have him in the 4-star tier, yeah.
Okay.
Even with the likely innings limit he's going to have, I don't think he's really all that far behind Jose Fernandez on a start by start basis.
He's like a peanut butter sandwich. I mean, you know what you're kind of getting every single time
mm-hmm.
when he goes out there.
Yeah.
You Darvish, what's the ceiling for him? Obviously there's so much risk that I can't even quantify it simply enough to spell it out, but what sort of, I guess we get a lot of bat signal questions about Yu Darvish right now because people are either being offered him or they're trying to trade for him, and I don't think people have any idea how to value him. So what do you see as the most likely scenario? If you were trading for or being offered Yu Darvish, how would you value him right now? Is this about right, the 3-star tier with these types of pitchers that he's ranked near?
Yeah, I think this feels about right. And the thing is, I mean, don't try to trade for Yu Darvish right now. I mean, he's literally coming back. When this comes out, he's coming back tomorrow. The person who drafted him just has been sitting on Darvish for 2 months waiting for him to show up. That owner is at the peak of their excitement. Don't do that now. Don't. Wait until, if you want to try to trade for Darvish, wait until he has a clunker, because he will, and then put out feelers. But don't try to do it now.
My favorite Yu Darvish stat, he has like a 10 ERA against Oakland in his career. I don't know why. The A's just crush him every single time. So wait until he faces Oakland. I want someone to do a story on this, because I've owned Darvish in the past for years, and he just sucks against Oakland, and there's no explanation for it. He just, oh, well, it's Oakland. I don't know. It's weird.
It's inexplainable.
Oh, one more guy. I'll let you just expound on whoever you want to talk about. But there's one guy I want to touch on. That's Drew Pomeranz, who's all the way down at 62 in the 2-star tier. I think he's done enough to be a 3-star guy to me. That's the only gripe I have with any other ranking on this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the big question about him is can he hold up?
Well, yeah, what's his innings ceiling? Because he threw, what, 87 or 100 last year innings? I mean,
he...
80-something, right?
Yeah, he's not going to throw a full season, especially for that team. Yeah. You never know when his season's gonna end. I mean, he's sort of the next progression down from, you know, you talk about Fernandez and Matz as sort of the high end of guys who are performing well, but you know we're going to have a limit at some point. You know, I think probably about two steps below Matz is Pomeranz, and that, you know, that probably puts him right in the right spot here. The guy who I want to just talk about really, really quickly before we move on, mm-hmm. is Justin Verlander. Verlander is striking out more than a batter per inning for the first time in a few years. He has been just about dominant in the month of May. He's made five starts in May. He's got a 2.8 ERA. He's got 39 strikeouts in 35 innings. I am really tempted to have Verlander as a four-star guy. I think he's back. I think he was underrated last year, and you know, he sort of got spotlighted by DRA a little bit as someone who was really good. We just didn't really see it. I think now we're starting to see it, and I'm excited for where he goes from here.
Yeah, Verlander was going actually pretty late in drafts all offseason. Like, no one wanted to touch him. And if you followed DRA and read some of the stuff on Verlander, I think that was definitely an area you could gain some problems. See, here's the thing. We talked about Rich Hill, Verlander. I mean, should we be quicker to buy into these types of changes in value when we always talk about, well, we want to see something over a sustained period of time, and you want to be hesitant a little bit to buy into everything you see. But it feels like fantasy owners who bought into changes in value more quickly, I should say, have really benefited, it feels like, in the last maybe year or so. Is that like just an extreme case because I'm only cherry picking examples here, or does it feel that way to you at all, that it's changing a little how we play?
I think it's different. I think it's more different with pitchers than it is with hitters. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's okay to be a little bit cautious with hitters, but with pitchers, when you see something that you think is real, you have to just jump on it, just because, one, pitchers are easier to acquire when they're not bona fide aces, and two, you know, pitching can change overnight. You know, it's hard for a guy to be just a completely different hitter overnight, but a couple of, like a tick or two of velocity or a new pitch, and a guy is just a completely different pitcher. So you have to be willing to suspend your anchoring on a starter when it calls for it. You know, it's about moving quickly and hopefully as correctly as possible. But, you know, you move quickly on a couple of guys, you'll hit on one or two of them.
We were talking about this off the air before the podcast, but CC Sabathia, I mean, ditching the fastball and going cutter sinker has actually kind of, I wouldn't say revitalized his career or anything like that at this point, but he's been serviceable and he's striking people out, which is unusual. So I think, you know, just small stuff like that, I think, is worth following up on.
Yeah, especially when you get the guys who are on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues,
in like every league. Mm-hmm. The last, well, we don't have to talk about him, but I think it's worth pointing out Sonny Gray's in the preseason, he was number 21 in our tiered rankings. If you count it out, he's now number 81 on this update. So aside from really injury, and I guess he's technically injured right now, but have we seen it, you know, a guy drop this far this quickly? I mean, because this ranking doesn't seem too optimistic at this point.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure Adam Wainwright was higher than Sonny Gray in the preseason, and he's completely off of Mike's list.
I didn't even notice that, really?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. We really need to get Mike back on. Thankfully, he's coming back next week.
Yeah, Mike can talk about that. I'm more optimistic on Gray and Wainwright than he is, and I'm actually way less optimistic on Dallas Keuchel than he is.
I know,
But that is really, I mean, when you get to guys that are struggling like that, it's really all about personal preference and risk tolerance.
I was going to say they talked about Keuchel on Effectively Wild, Ben and Sam did a couple episodes ago. You can check it out. There was actually a good breakdown of some of the problems he's dealt with and how there's actually probably no easy solution for him at this point. It's not just going to magically turn around, it looks like. So, yep. Okay. Anything else you want to hit on? Or are we, I think we did a pretty thorough job with this.
I think so. I mean, I think we covered a lot of guys. You know, I'm sure you'll have some questions for Mike when he comes back next week. But I think we did a pretty good job with these rankings. I'm proud of them. I think they'll hopefully be helpful. You can check them out at Baseball Prospectus. And when you're listening to this, I believe we'll have posted the updated top 300 overall as well. So. That's it. We'll do it again in like 6 weeks.
Yeah, very exciting. Last thing before we get out of here, I have to ask you about Julio Urias. What's your sort of take on the whole situation? Because I don't know if I've ever really heard it this year. We got JJ Jansen's on a few weeks ago, and he talked about it. But where do you stand on how they're going to use him, and what type of impact do you think he can have? Because I just think it's really cool. This whole thing.
Yeah, I think that it's awesome. I also think that I'm not very high on his fantasy value for this year. I think he's going to get way more hype than he probably should, just because one, it's not even guaranteed that he's going to start the entire portion of the season that he's allowed to participate in, and even if he does, the Dodgers are pretty unlikely to let him go past about 110, 120 innings given his career workload. So you're looking at maybe 12 starts, probably 12, 13 starts, best case scenario. And he might not even pitch too deep into games when he does start. So I think he's going to be really good. But from a fantasy standpoint, I think he'll end up probably disappointing if you make a big play for him.
I think the stuff is really good, and that's maybe the only reason to actually really go in on him, I think, if you're going to. If they move him to the bullpen, do you think he could do what basically Kelvin Herrera is doing right now? Like a better, more innings version of that?
Not
Betances level, but or Andrew.
No, level, no, but. I don't think he can strike out that many guys out of the bullpen. I think he could. I think he'd be a, 2 ERA, kind of 11 to 12 strikeouts per nine guy out of the bullpen. He could be really good.
He's new Ken Giles. Well, Ken Giles might be back. I don't know.
Ken Giles is back.
He was throwing 100 the other night. That was very cool.
I know. I know. I don't want to talk about relievers though.
Yeah, no. Let's not do that. All right. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back and wrap things up here on Flags Fly Forever. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 92 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I know I teased it at the beginning of the show tonight, but BP Ballpark events are back. The first one is going to be July 9th at Citi Field. It's going to be a great night. You can meet BP personalities. Brett's going to be there, Mike Gianella, Craig Goldstein, Ben Lindbergh, author of The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, along with Sam Miller, great book, Jeff Paternostro, and the rest of the BP Mets staff. There's going to be a Q&A, and then you get to go watch a baseball game, and you get a fedora as well. If you're in the Atlanta area, on July 16th, we have another great one coming up. This one, especially because we're going to have a Q&A session with Braves general manager John Coppola. You're not going to want to miss that one. I know he's an avid baseball prospectus reader, from everything I understand. So the Braves and the Rockies play afterwards. That's going to be a great event. I might even fly to Atlanta for this one. It's going to be cool. So we got a lot going on at BP. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us. Check out the updated rankings on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership today. You get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service, which is a great service if you have a roster or a trade decision you have to make. And you want some feedback, send that over to us, and we'll get back to you within usually 12 to 24 hours. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell, 2 S's, 2 L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Email us, flagflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayer, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with Mike Gianella and a lot more here on Flags Fly Forever. Have a good night.